both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Our next case of the morning is number 042305, the United States against Rafael Villa Beltran.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Justin Penn. I'm from Hinshaw & Culbertson, and I represent Rafael Rea Beltran in this appeal of his conviction and sentence for illegal reentry after deportation and attempted use of a false passport. I've raised a number of issues in our appellate brief, and I'm prepared to answer questions on all of those issues. However, given the limited time, I'm going to focus my comments today on the issue raised with respect to the vacating of the plea agreement. It's my position that it was an abuse of discretion for the district court to vacate the plea agreement that had been entered into between Mr. Rea Beltran and the government. The decision to vacate the plea agreement was based on a mistake of law, as it was based on a belief that intent to reenter without the express consent of the Attorney General was an element of the crime of reentry, and that is not an element of the crime. The reason that it was vacated was because Mr. Rea Beltran had made a statement that he didn't know that he needed the permission of the Attorney General to reenter after his deportation.
Could I ask you, Mr. Penn, if we were to agree with you about this, all these other issues about the suppression and everything else go off the table? I mean, what would be the relief that you're looking for?
With respect to this issue, the relief that we would be looking for is that the sentence that was imposed be vacated, that the case be remanded for resentencing within the guideline range that was set forth in the plea agreement, which is a significantly different guideline range than he was sentenced to.
So would you imagine that this was a plea agreement that preserved the right? Usually plea agreements preserve the right of the district court anyway to take its own look at what the appropriate sentence would be. The parties will sometimes say, we think that these are the ranges, but...
Well, this plea agreement, right, it was. The judge could have sentenced him anywhere. The recommended guideline range was 70 to 87 months, or 60 to 87 months, I apologize.
So what I'm trying to get at, there's that. But this plea agreement dropped the... false passport count, was that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And when looking at the record, it's important, I think, to... Well, first of all, the district court's decision was an application of a mistake of law, which is always an abuse of discretion. It's undisputed in this case that intent or knowledge that you didn't have the Attorney General's permission is not an element of this crime for which he was pleading guilty. So the real issue is to look at the underlying record and determine what was the reasoning given by the district court. And it's very, very clear that the reasoning given was when Judge Holderman said, I'm going to vacate the plea agreement because the defendant has now expressed his innocence by claiming that he did not, at the time of the offense, know that he needed the Attorney General's permission. That was the reason he gave for vacating the plea agreement. I think that going back, it's important to look at how it got to that statement, how Mr. Rea Beltran made that statement. Procedurally, this goes back to even to the plea agreement. At the plea agreement, Mr. Rea Beltran began raising concerns that he wanted to show the judge and explain to the judge that he was not as bad of a guy as he's being made out to be. And this is reflected in a number of ways. The most evident is his criminal history category. He had serious concerns that the criminal history category overrepresented his actual criminal history. And in addressing that, at the plea agreement, when they got to the point of addressing the downward departure, they had to stop and explain to Mr. Rea Beltran that he would have the right to challenge that later, and that was his concern. But it's significant that that concern came up when they addressed the issue of downward departure.
You mean at the first Rule 11?
At the initial plea colloquy when they were entering into the plea agreement.
That's what I mean, yeah.
And so when they stop and they explain it to him, and he says, I do understand. I understand now that I'll be able to later make sure that the court has that right. And then they entered into this plea agreement. Mr. Rea Beltran then changed attorneys, and his new attorney at the sentencing made a motion for a downward departure. The motion for downward departure was based on Mr. Rea Beltran's concern that he wanted to tell the judge, I was coming to the U.S. for 3 days, and I was coming here because, and I had a return flight. I was only coming to buy water pumps. So, again, it's this concern, this overriding concern that he has, that I want to make sure that the judge knows I'm not as bad of a guy and that this be considered. Through the hearing on the motion for downward departure, which was where he wanted to express why he was here, it came out that Mr. Rea Beltran, there was some issue as to conversations that Mr. Rea Beltran had with his attorney. So at the next hearing, they brought in Mr. Rea Beltran's former attorney to determine what these conversations were with respect to the downward departure. And again, this is the concern that he had was, again, downward departure, meaning I want the minimum sentence I can get because I'm not that bad. I'm not who they've made me out to be, or my criminal history is over.
It certainly doesn't make him unique. Everybody wants the minimum sentencing possible under the circumstances.
Absolutely.
If the Attorney General had given permission for him to return, there wouldn't be a case, would there?
That's correct. But that issue was... That issue is significant in the trial aspect of it. It's not significant as to whether Mr. Rea Beltran knew. Mr. Rea Beltran didn't need to know.
Did he know that he was committing a crime? Was he admitting to coming here?
Yes. He did know. Well, it's interesting that you asked that.
It was interesting because I couldn't figure out what he was pleading guilty to, whether he really admitted that he knew when he came back he was committing.
You know, it doesn't matter whether or not he knew.
But I understand.
What's interesting in what you're saying is what he said, and the way it came out was as they were questioning him, he said, "The judge, when he sentenced me, told me I had 5 years and then I could come back after that."
Yeah.
What's interesting is that he's saying that the judge told him that in May of 2003, and he came back in in May of 1998, and he came back in February of 2003. So it still hadn't been 5 years. His statement wasn't even an expression of innocence. It was an admission of guilt, irrespective of whether or not that was, even if intent were an element of the crime, which it's not. So it was a mistake of fact in addition to applying a mistake of law. But how we got there was, after the motion for downward departure was made, and then they began the next hearing on the issue, Mr. Rea Beltran continued to express this concern that he didn't want to be sentenced based on the information that was not yet out there. And so the downward departure was the reasons that he came back into the U.S. and the fact that he had a return ticket. And the district court judge even says at that hearing, these are proper considerations at a sentencing, but they're not proper for a motion for downward departure. And it's important to note here that no one, not the government, not Mr. Rea Beltran's attorney, no one asked for a withdrawal of the plea agreement. But it was upon hearing that Mr. Rea Beltran didn't believe that he was violating the law, that's when the district court said, I think we're going to have to go to trial here. I'm going to vacate it. And he said, I'm going to vacate it, because Mr. Rea Beltran has now expressed his innocence.
So your main point is that the law has been violated as soon as he knows that he's getting on an airplane that's going to Chicago. It doesn't really make any difference.
Right, barring an extreme hypothetical.
That, you know, unless he's been knocked unconscious or something and heaved onto the airplane.
Exactly. Intent is not an issue in this crime. And that's clear. And this court has adopted that and expressed that in U.S. versus Carlos. Sorry, my Spanish is not good.
Colmenares.
Colmenares.
Right.
And in that case, it made very clear, this court made clear that it's not, intent is not, this is one of those rare criminal cases where intent is not an issue. You don't have to know or believe
well,
that you're...
Well, it's general intent, which of course doesn't mean a heck of a lot, but it is, I mean, it's that you weren't hit over the head or you didn't, you know, weren't wandering across the Arizona desert and suddenly finding yourself on the side of some hypothetical line.
None of which occurred in this. But when he was... It's interesting that in the hearing with respect to his sentencing, which was after the motion for downward departure had been made, several times Mr. Rea Beltran is asked questions about the downward departure, and he even says at certain points that he understood that he couldn't seek a downward departure, and he explains he understands the ramifications of pleading guilty and getting 3 points off. He was getting 2 points for pleading and 1 point for timely doing so. So he understood what he was doing, but then the breakdown becomes at this hearing when he would say things, and it's evident when he says, I was sure, it's the misunderstanding here is with respect to him believing that downward departure somehow equates, the words downward departure, somehow equates to him getting the minimum sentence that he can. And he even says that his attorney, with respect to conversations he had with his attorney, he said, I was sure I was getting a downward departure. I was getting the lowest possible. And we know that the term of art, downward departure, doesn't mean lowest possible. But to him, that's what he was equating the two to be. And so when he says things, when asked about the conversations between he and his attorney, between him and his attorney, he says, well, they ask, did you know that you couldn't make a motion for a downward departure? And he said, I tried to explain to my attorneys the reason why I was here. But he wouldn't listen. I was trying to explain. And there's this clear miscommunication because the reasons he was here are not relevant to the plea agreement, and they're not relevant to his entering into a guilty plea. So it's clear that every time that they're asking him about this downward departure, I think if you read the record fully, I think it's a fair understanding that every time that they ask him about this, he's equating the downward departure with somehow being sentenced at the low end of the scale. I see that I've exhausted my time, and I'm willing to address any questions that you have now. Otherwise, I'll save them for rebuttal.
I don't believe so.
Thanks.
Mr. Penn. Thank you. We'll hear now from Mr. Gerland.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Michael Gerland on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, Judge Holderman vacated the plea agreement because defendant and his counsel asked for that remedy. Mr. Cohen represented to the court that Rafael Rea Beltran's prior counsel did not fully explain the plea agreement to him and that the defendant didn't understand the ramifications of the plea agreement when he entered into it. And Judge Holderman...
There is all this confusion. You know, it's almost like Kafka or something. You look at this sequence of things and... It does seem that the judge was very concerned with this point, which I take it you agree under our law is not an element of the offense. This is not a specific intent offense where you have to say, I know that I am entering the United States without the express permission of the Attorney General. You just have to know you're going to the United States, and that's it. And it seems to me Judge Holderman hears him say, I thought I could come back, whether it's within 5 years or not, and thinks, you are not really pleading guilty. You are denying an element of the offense, and that's just wrong.
And
then things go off the tracks. You know, really, it's like a Monty Python skit, some of this transcript with people just sort of talking all over the place.
And I don't think that's an accurate representation of what happened when Judge Holderman vacated the plea agreement. If you look at the transcript before Judge Holderman said, and it appears as though he's disclaiming his innocence, prior to that, when the moment at which he vacated the plea agreement, he said, and I'm quoting from the transcript, I think what we're going to have to do is end up trying this case. Perhaps there have been some difficulties that have resulted from the past, and I agree with you, Mr. Cohen, this man did not understand. The primary reason he vacated the plea agreement was because he found that the defendant did not understand the agreement he had entered into. And the course of proceedings that followed, one of the things that occurred over and over again was the defendant said at various times, as Judge Holderman attempted to let the defendant plead guilty again and again was that he didn't understand things. He didn't understand what the word incriminating meant. He didn't understand various rights that he would have to give up in order to plead guilty. He didn't understand the waiver of his appellate rights. And so the record is actually replete with evidence of the defendant, for whatever reason, indicating that he didn't understand.
I was looking for this. This is page 44 of your cross. It's attached to the appellant's brief. And what precedes Judge Holderman's statement, okay, I think we're going to have to end up doing, I think what we're going to have to end up doing is trying this case, is a conversation about his understanding of the order not to reenter the country. It goes on, it's page appendix A014, and honestly, in context, it looks to me that Judge Holderman comes to that conclusion that the case has to be tried because of this. What is it that he doesn't understand? So you didn't think you were violating the order? And, you know, that's what's troublesome, the context.
But the first thing Judge Holderman says is his agreement with Mr. Cohen that the defendant didn't understand the
plea
agreement.
No, it doesn't say that. It says, and I agree with you, Mr. Cohen, this man did not understand, period. It doesn't say didn't understand the plea agreement. It doesn't say didn't understand the scope of the earlier order requiring him to leave the United States. We don't have the object of that sentence. And so then you look for it, and what you see is this colloquy between Mr. Rea Beltran and the court on the page before.
And what I would say is there several things. First of all, when he's referring to the defendant not understanding, what there is the defendant's motion that he's agreeing with, and that wasn't a motion concerning the elements of the offense. It was a motion concerning the defendant not understanding.
Was it a motion to withdraw the plea of guilty?
It was a motion to bring a downward departure, to do something the plea agreement did not.
So the answer is no, there was no motion to withdraw the plea.
Correct. I mean, the motion stated by Mr. Cohen was to bring a motion, and in a sense it was in effect.
Disregarding all the other motions, there simply was no motion to withdraw the plea.
Correct. There was a motion to do something not permitted by the plea agreement.
Yeah. Well, dealing, which of course the government deals with from time to time, and you just tell the judge, you know, that's beyond the scope of the agreement. But what has gone on before this this crucial statement of Judge Holderman's at that sentencing proceeding is all this stuff. You understood, using that word, that's Judge Holderman speaking, that you were violating the order not to reenter the country. And then he talks about the five-year business. They go back and forth. And then you get this statement by Judge Holderman. I agree with you, Mr. Cohen. This man did not understand, period. And then they start talking about when to have the trial, which is a different topic altogether.
And
don't we need to at least figure out what Judge Holderman was talking about there? Because if Judge Holderman made an error of law in revoking his acceptance of the plea agreement without any motion by the defendant, then that's an abuse of discretion, isn't it?
And I would submit it. Separate and apart from the reasons I've already said, I would also submit that it's not an error of law because defendant's statement that the judge, putting aside the fact that defendant's statement was false, that there was no evidence that he had been told he could re-enter in 5 years, because the fact of the matter is if you commit an aggravated felony, you can't re-enter, period.
Without the permission of the Attorney General.
Correct. If defendant's statement were true,
either false or mistaken, we don't know, you know, do we really... when the defendant was talking about this five-year business, he says, I remember they told me, for all I know, some judge made a mistake.
Well, I do know because we had the tapes of the hearing. They were not made part of the evidence, but there is no such representation.
To or maybe his lawyer told him and he was
could
confused.
Could have reentered 5 years.
Lawyers in this field are
But his statement would have supported a potential defense of estoppel by public authority. The government told me that I could come back.
How often does that work? Can you think of a single case where that defense has actually prevailed? I don't think so.
But the point being, it would raise a defense, and it does throw into question the defendant's admission of the elements of the crime.
But it wasn't an element of the crime that he could come back in 5 years or 20 years or 5 minutes. I mean, it was irrelevant to whether he had committed this offense, what he thought about that.
But not if he had a recognizable legal defense to the crime charge, which is separate apart from that, is it's government's position that there was no harm and there was no prejudice to the defendant by the court's decision to vacate the plea agreement. The defendant received a fair trial.
But he got a much longer sentence. If you had dropped the other charge and he had gotten his acceptance of responsibility, which he was going to get given the timeliness of the plea and the like, there were significant differences to the sentencing range he was facing.
And I would submit...
I mean, that makes a difference to people, the Supreme Court told us in Glover.
In perjuring himself at the first hearing...
That's later on. That none of that would have happened.
I was referring to the hearing at the first sentencing when he indicated he was told he could come back into the country, as well as the subsequent perjury at the suppression hearing.
Well, we don't know if... it has to be a false statement, it has to be material, it has to be all sorts of things. And since the judge thought it was on a material point, he characterized it as perjury. If it was on an immaterial point, maybe it wouldn't have been.
And it's the government's position that however you describe the proceedings that occurred, I mean, the fact of the matter is the defendant still hasn't to this day fully accepted responsibility for this crime. He still... up to this point is contesting an element of the offense. He perjured himself.
What element of the offense is he contesting?
He contested at trial the issue of whether or not he did in fact have permission to reenter the country. The other portion of the motion, the suppression motion, which is also before the court, concerns defendant's argument that but for this alleged two-step process, I never would have made the admission that I made about not having the permission from the Attorney General.
Yeah, I think it's a completely irrelevant admission. I don't think it's a confession. I don't think it's an admission. It's a kind of statement hanging around out there, since it's irrelevant. I mean, I know there was a lot of energy spent on it, but I just don't see the pertinence of it.
And the government would agree with that. I mean, that issue was proven by separate evidence and by unimpeachable evidence through
Look,
the
yeah, you stopped him at
O'Hare,
and he started out in Mexico, and he had a prior order against him. That's it. I mean, so I don't know what else there was. And he was not a citizen of the United States. So.
And with regard to the plea agreement, it's the government's position that the judge was within his discretion to vacate it when he did because of defense counsel's claim and defendant's claim that he didn't understand portions of the plea agreement, that he didn't understand the sentence he was going to receive under the plea agreement. That was contested. He said he didn't understand whether or not he could make this motion for a downward departure. And the reason we were before the court that day was so that his prior counsel, Richard Boyke, could be questioned by both parties because it was claimed that Mr. Boyke was ineffective in explaining the plea agreement to the defendant and that he simply didn't understand it.
I hate to belabor this, but you keep adding all of these ends of the sentence that he didn't understand. And on page 46, which is at A16, Judge Holderman again says, summarizing, I'm going to vacate the plea agreement because the defendant has now expressed his innocence by saying at the time of the offense he did not know he was violating the law. How clear could that be?
And I'm not contesting that he said that, but that wasn't the first thing that he said.
How do we know that if the judge had been aware that this wasn't a protestation of innocence, he would have, instead of focusing on the plea agreement, which is at the guilt stage, he would have focused on what's the right sentence for this guy. For all I know, deny him, accept. I don't know what he would have done, but he didn't go on and resolve things at the sentencing stage. He instead vacates the plea agreement.
And I assume the government obviously doesn't have any objection to the case going back on a Palladino remand to see if the judge would have done the same thing under a advisory guideline regime. Perhaps he can be asked that same question.
But that assumes that the first calculation is correct, and what I understand from Mr. Penn is that one of the reasons they're here about this plea agreement is that there would have been a different properly calculated guideline range to use as an advisory benchmark.
And it's the government's position that that plea agreement was vacated because that's what the defendant asked for, and because of the shenanigans that the defendant engaged in at that stage of the proceeding and all through the proceedings up through trial. When you describe the proceedings as Kafkaesque, it's because the defendant time and time again played these games, and I don't believe that the court did anything wrong in ensuring that the defendant had all of his rights protected by giving him a fair trial. The defendant asked for a trial at the end of the day, and the defendant questioned the legality of the plea agreement by contesting and saying that it wasn't fully explained to him by his prior counsel.
We'll read the transcripts.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. How much time does counsel have?
3 minutes.
Thank you.
Take 4 minutes. What the heck?
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll make a couple of brief points. The government addressed the estoppel by public authority. To the extent that that was what the district court was relying on, believing that that statement would provide him the estoppel for public authority, that too is a mistake of law, because the estoppel by public authority defense is not allowed when a defendant is charged with a federal crime and he claims that a state official, in this case a state judge, would have told him differently. So regardless of what any of these state criminal judges told him, that would not provide a defense for estoppel by public authority. That was addressed by this court in U.S. versus Rector.
And district court had not vacated that plea agreement, would your client still, after the motion that had been made, be eligible for a downward departure?
I believe that he would not have been eligible. He could not have made a motion for downward departure. Whether or not he would have been eligible for a sentence outside of the guideline range, the answer is yes. But he would not have been. He could not make a motion for downward departure, nor could the government make a motion for upward departure under the plea agreement. And the district court could have simply denied the motion for downward departure and left it at that. And that brings me to the second point, my concluding point. There's a lot of discussion as to what was said in this transcript and the comment that you were discussing with where he said, I agree that your client doesn't understand. Well, it's clear from the record, first of all, that the plea agreement was vacated because of his expression of what the district court judge took to be an expression of innocence. However, even if that were not it, and we want to focus on this did not understand comment when he says your client did not understand, there's not enough in the record that clearly indicates what the sound reason was for denying this. Without anything further than if we were just going to look at the comment, your client did not understand, with nothing further, we're forced to speculate as to what it is he did not understand. And when dealing with something as significant as vacating a plea agreement, I think that there has to be something more than us looking back and speculating as to what the reason was. But we don't even have to get that far in this case, because it's very clear, as Your Honor pointed out, the timing of it and the fact that he says the reason I'm vacating this is because he has expressed his innocence. So I thank you for your time. If you have any other questions, my light's still on. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Penn, you served by appointment of the court, and on behalf of the court, you have our deep thanks, as does your law firm, for the time and that you all expended on such fine representation for your client. And indeed, our thanks to all counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.